The Dave Logan Show.
Dave Logan and Dave Krieger
on News Radio 850 KOA.
Wow. What day is it?
Well, I think it might be Friday already.
I think the Rockies started at 9 this morning, or was that yesterday morning? I don't know. Hey, you know what? The Rockies get a big win today. 11-inning victory over the Washington Nationals. And about 5 minutes ago, we caught up with one of the stars of the game, Tyler Colvin, who had just a terrific game. Colvin on the day, 4-for-6 with 5 RBI. And the guy that hot early is a 3-run homer to get the Rockies off to a good start. So 5 minutes ago, an earlier conversation with Rockies star Tyler Colvin. Hey, Tyler, big day at the park, obviously, for the team in 11 innings. But talk about your day, 4-for-6. It seemed like, obviously, you saw the ball very well today.
Yeah, I did see it pretty well, and luckily got us some decent counts and got some good pitches to hit.
Tyler, talk a little bit about continuing to have to put up numbers as a ball club. I mean, 11 runs today, does it at all get to be a situation where you guys feel the pressure to have to score that many?
I wouldn't say we feel the pressure, but, you know, it's one of those things where we know we can't waste any at-bats, you know, and it's kind of a good thing just because, you know, makes you focus up there and know that, you know, every bat really does count.
You know, I think if there would be a positive from this series, you guys split the series with the Nationals. That's a first-place team over there and a team that has been scoring a lot of runs, and conversely, a team that came in with a team ERA of under 3, and you guys put some big numbers up in 40 games.
Yeah, well, you know, you can definitely tell why they're, you know, number one in their conference, in their division, just because, you know, they kept battling like today. You know, we had a 7-run lead, and they kept coming back and tied it up and tied it up again. So hats off to them, and you're right, you know, they have a really good ball club.
You have taken advantage of the opportunities that have been presented to you in terms of playing time. What's been the difference for you this year?
Just staying the same, not trying to do too much, and staying within myself. It's just one of those things where as long as I keep focused on going to left center, and I'll just react on pitches in instead of trying to look in and hit homers all the time.
Tyler Colvin is our guest. Final couple of questions. You've been in center field. You've been at first base. I mean, if in a perfect world you could play one spot, where do you think is the ideal spot for you?
I don't know. you know, I haven't really had a set position the last 3 years, you know, since I got up to the big leagues. So it's one of those things where I just got to stay comfortable in all of them and be ready for any situation.
Can you pitch?
I'd like to think I could, but I don't think I could get people out here.
Let me just ask you this, Tyler. It's obviously been a rough go of it for the ball club this year. How do you guys avoid pointing fingers, and how do you stay together and keep things on a positive and keep working together and pulling for each other in that clubhouse?
Well, we're a team here, and when you have young pitchers, it's going to be a process, and it's just kind of looking forward to once everyone figures it out, like how good we're going to be. So it's just one of those things. We just keep battling and try to score them runs and see if we can get some wins.
Big game for you today. Big game for the Rockies. Tyler, thanks for the time, man. We appreciate it.
Hey, no problem.
So our conversation with Tyler Colvin, he obviously had a very big game, as we were talking about, 4-for-6 with 5 RBI. The Rockies had 20 hits today. We've come to know that park, and especially the home team from time to time, can have days like this. But when you're not going good, to see this kind of offense is kind of nice. Dexter Fowler was 3-for-6. Marco Scudero is 3-for-6. Carlos Gonzalez was 3-for-5. That's your top three hitters. 9-4. What would that be? 9-for-16?
Yeah, unbelievable. 9-17.
9-for-17. Yeah, shows you that I can't add very well.
I'll let it slide.
Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
So 303-713-8585 is the number. We can talk a little bit about that. We have a very short show, obviously, as we're going to be with you till 7 o'clock tonight. The NBA draft is underway. We'll try to bring you up to date on that. We do have a couple of Facebook topics of the day with 4 packs of Rockies firework tickets. That's going to be a Friday night game for each winner. So we'll do that a little bit later on in the hour. We'll also try to bring you up to speed with respect to the situation of the Waldo Canyon fire, which is a little bit better today than it certainly was yesterday.
No doubt. I mean, thank goodness for that, too. I mean, can you imagine it staying the same from what it's been the last few days?
Yep, no changes to the evacuation notices in the last 24 hours. We're going to have a chance to talk to Doug Nunke, who's the president of the Navigators, which is a missionary organization. Really kind of a surreal story, and we'll let him tell most of it. But there is, amidst all this bad news, and the bad news, obviously, hundreds of homes destroyed in this fire, the Waldo Canyon fire. But there is a sliver of good news here and there, and we're going to bring you at least one of those good news stories coming up here in about 10 minutes.
Should be interesting to hear. I mean, you think of the devastation and the pictures that are online, Dave. It's unbelievable to see what that fire did to, you know, whole neighborhoods or subdivisions, or virtually whole neighborhoods or subdivisions. Unbelievable. I mean, it's just staggering. The loss, and Colorado Springs Mayor Steve Bott coming out today and saying what obviously a lot of people knew, which was hundreds of homes have been destroyed. They haven't yet released an actual number. I think they're still gathering and putting together an official number as best they know it.
6:11 our time on News Radio 850 KLA. Tom in Denver joins us with Dave Logan and Mike Rice. Hi, Tom.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Hey, so I just want to bring up, I appreciate the Rocks won today, and everyone's feeling good about it, but I sat at that game, and I watched Cargo overrun third base, not knowing where the ball was, and I thought of Scudero the other night and how we really got taken out of that ball game at the end when he made that best base running error, and then Cargo made the same mistake, and then Colvin steps up and hits a three-run homer instead of a grand slam, and it was early in the game, but I made the statement, I said, if we lose this game by a run, that has significant impact. And sure enough, Harper, I don't know if anyone saw Harper's home run in the top of the ninth, but it was huge. But he ties that game up. And if he and then we got the next three outs. So my point here is just this team has, while I think they show some great ability, at the same time we're really making some errors. I just would like to point that out and get your perspective on it, and I'll let you guys talk, okay?
Okay, thank you, Tom. Here's my perspective. This would be my analogy. If you are, and I am, and Mike is, 6 years of age, actually, let's be nine. We're 9 years old. And for the last 5 years, on Christmas, we've had coal in our stocking. And this year, we got a box of donuts. You know, I'm going to be really happy with the donuts. And I'm going to share the donuts with my family, and I'm going to get a glass of milk, and I'm going to dunk my donut in that milk. And it's going to be maybe the absolute best Christmas gift that I've had, because I've had nothing. So while your point, I think, is legitimate, you know, they have been so bad this year that when they can win two games out of four at home against the first-place team, you know, I would tend to, and again, I agree with your point. Mm-hmm. They've not played clean defensively. I mean, Chris Nelson had a huge error today that allowed the inning to continue. And then there
three
was a
more runs.
Three runs score after that to tie the game at nine. That said, they found a way to win a game. And in this particular season, I think we have to focus on, whenever that happens, some of the positives. They left 25 men on base today. I mean, I'm not sure if that's a record or not. I don't know. But if not, it's got to be close.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think the point is legitimate. It also points to the fact that they're not a crisp team, obviously. The pitching has been, well, challenging, shall we say, for the, you know, to the very least. But I agree with Dave. I mean, you get a win, you enjoy the win. The other thing, too, is
you want to eat your donut, don't you?
You want to have the donut. You want to enjoy the milk. It's not as if the Nationals played a perfect game either. I mean, I'm sure they can look back on any given, on certain situations and say, this is something that if we hadn't done this, the Rockies wouldn't have scored that extra run or two. I mean, that is common in games. I'm not excusing it. I don't think you are either, Logs, but I'll take an 11-10 win.
I'll take the donut. Diane in Lakewood on 850 KOA. Hi, Diane.
First time calling in. Thanks for taking my call.
Nice to have you.
I've been listening to your show for a couple of years. I just basically have a couple of comments. Over the last weeks or months, people have been talking about the pitching, you know, and how bad it is. And we heard the news about Bob Apodaca. But I beg to differ. Jim Tracy is the manager, and he's making decisions on the people that he's trading to get these players.
You beg to differ with what?
Well, I think that you guys are always, you know, kind of defending Jim Tracy. I don't think he's a good manager. I think he's making some very bad decisions on people that he's trading to get to be on the team. And I think he's, bottom line, he's the manager. He's making a lot of money, and the buck stops there. I think he's the one that needs to go.
Well, sooner or later, the buck does stop there, and the buck stops in the GM's office,
yeah.
The buck stops in the scout's office, and the buck stops really in a lot of places when you're playing this poorly. I don't think we've given a pass to Jim Tracy. I think Tracy's a good manager.
Can I say one more thing?
Well, sure.
Rick Hurdle was a good manager, and I think Jim Tracy was instrumental in getting rid of him so that he could be the manager.
So in other words, you have kind of had the red behind ever since because you think Tracy was one of the reasons that Hurdle's not here?
I think you guys are always defending Jim Tracy.
Well,
the bottom line is, like, for any owner of a company, and that's basically kind of what he is, he's making the main decisions about who he's playing.
But he's not. Diane, let me just.
Trading. And Jim, and I think he's making bad decisions.
You guys
are always defending him. I don't know. I don't quite understand.
You should call more because really we haven't always defended him at all on this show. And I can understand if you think Tracy was involved. I don't know whether he was or wasn't. One of us do. And if you think he was, I understand if you were a big Clint Hurdle fan and I was too, that you've held that against Jim Tracy. I understand that. And ultimately, you know what? If the season continues, and I've said this countless times this year, if the season continues as is, really nobody's job is safe, including Jim Tracy's.
Well, the thing is, like, my husband and I own a business, and bottom line is he's the manager. He's making the decisions about who he's trading.
No, he's not. Stop right, Diane, time out. I don't mean to interrupt, but Jim Tracy that's not where the buck stops in terms of roster moves. Dan O'Dowd is the GM, and he has the final say. Now, Jim Tracy has
a lot of influence.
He has input.
Tracy also
but
makes some
Diane,
really bad decisions about when Diane. He puts people in there at certain like to play, you know, outfield or to pitch. It's like he's making decisions. Like he's overanalyzing everything. He just makes some really bad decisions, and that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Diane. Appreciate that.
Understand the frustration.
Yeah.
But and as far as on the field moves, Diane, you are correct that Jim Tracy makes those moves. But in terms of the roster and the composition of the roster, while Jim has input, he is not the final say.
I mean,
no doubt oversees.
I would just suggest listen to the show. We're happy to have you, and that was your first time calling.
And we love it.
But you know what? I've said ever since this is kind of headed in the direction that it's currently going. When you are in professional sports and you play this poorly, everybody's job is on the line, including Jim Tracy, including Dan O'Dowd.
No doubt.
Including the numerous scouts, including front office personnel. Really, the only guys' jobs that are safe are the guys that own the team. That's what happens when you don't play well in professional sports. It's not always fair, but that's how it goes. 6:18 the time, a little bit late. We're going to get some traffic information on a cloudy Thursday early evening. Here's Vicki Evans on 850 KOA. Back 6:21 on 850 KOA. Dave Logan and Mike Rice, we have full lines. We'll ask for your patience. We were talking earlier about the Waldo Canyon fire. We'll get back talking Rockies baseball here in just a moment. There have been, at last count, 300-plus, I believe it is 361 homes that have been lost. And so certainly plenty of devastating news from that fire. There also, as I mentioned, are some good things, or at least some fortunate things that took place. Doug Nunke is the president of the Navigators, which is a missionary organization, and joins us now. Doug, thanks for your time. Dave Logan and Mike Rice, how are you?
Dave and Mike, thanks. Thanks for having me on your show.
You've got an interesting and really almost surreal story in terms of the Glen Eyrie building being completely untouched by fire when it looked like that was not going to be the case, correct?
It was, we only can just be thankful. We just can be thankful for what seemed to be almost, miraculous that God helped. But we realize that's hard when there's many other people that did not experience that, my wife and I included. So.
Doug, let me ask you this. The Glen Eyrie facility, if I have this right, is sort of at the base of Queens Canyon. Is that correct?
Yeah, Glen Eyrie Conference Center. It was actually built by General Palmer, the founder of Colorado Springs. It's a big castle there, and it sits right at the base of Queens Canyon. And, yes, that's where it is.
Is there any way that, you thought sort of that it would be come out of this untouched?
We have a crisis response team that went into action when the Glen, we have another camp, Eagle Lake, our home, a lot of the people there in the western part, northwestern part of Colorado Springs were evacuated. The night, on Tuesday night, I when the fire was just came over the hill, I got a call from our crisis response team, and they said it was in the bottom of Queens Canyon. It was behind the Glen area that there was fire. In both those places.
So for people that are not quite familiar with where that would be, I mean, when what you just described, how close was the fire to that facility?
It was basically almost in the facility, Dave. You know, it was right there. And we, you know, have no idea quite what, you know, what took place. But we, the next morning, the place was untouched. Just amazing, amazing. We, you know, we really expected it to be gone. My wife and I went to bed that night. You know, there's incredible stories of God's goodness and grace in the lives of people. There's people all over this country that have spent time at Glen Eyrie and, you know, basically, you know, heard God speak to their life or give them hope in hard times. And it's a special place for a lot of people. And we went to bed that night, you know, just crushed, expecting it to be gone.
Doug, you mentioned sort of the surreal nature of this. On the one hand, I'm sure elated that the Glen made it through. But as you said, not only your personal loss, but the losses of so many other people, it must be hard to reconcile at some level.
Yeah, it's hard to understand, you know, and the pain and the tragedy that that's being felt by many families and people all over the Pikes Peak region. It's no question that it's unfathomable, you know, and it's something that's going to impact us for a long time, and yet somehow, you know, we can, and you know, we in the Navigators, at least what we do. We help people find hope in the most desperate situations. And that's what we do. And, you know, there was a there's this old hymn written by a guy named Horatio Stafford who lost his whole family in an ocean liner accident. And he wrote, like, on the heels of that, which is amazing. I mean, I guess people of faith have this kind of hope. He wrote, "When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll," this is written by a guy who just lost his whole family, "whatever my lot, you, God, have taught me to say, it is well. It is well with my soul." And my wife and I, you know, that was in our head, you know, late last night when we had just looked at a website and, you know, a picture aerial view of our neighborhood and our street and saw that our house was no longer there.
Doug, before we let you go, you mentioned you and your wife's loss with your house. What at this point now, you, like so many others, unfortunately have to deal with that. What's the next step in this process for you guys?
Well, we have, you know, we have two next steps. You know, we, you know, I'm involved in a leadership community of the Navigators, and there's many people in the faith community that have already been supportive of us and the city, restaurants, businesses that have helped us make it through. We, you know, we have our offices set up down here at Focus on the Family. They've given us some space, so we're being cared for. And so our next steps are, you know, to figure out, as many people, what do we do with our homes? But we also want to be very conscious of the fact that there's literally thousands of families that have been impacted, and we want to be available to reach out and help them and to serve and, you know, to just put one foot in front of their help people and help this community regain its footing and move and rebuild.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good message. Doug, thanks a lot for sharing your story. We certainly appreciate it.
Yep, thanks for having me on.
You
thanks,
bet. Doug Nunke, who is the president of Navigators, which is a missionary organization, the Glen Eyrie building, as you heard him say, he thought for sure was gone, untouched by the fire. That's a sliver of good news in the situation when there is so much on the other side.
It's unfathomable, the loss and destruction. And to hear one story, and there are probably others, undoubtedly others, is certainly a little uplifting.
Yeah, absolutely. We segue back to baseball now. Mike on a cell phone on 850 KOA with Dave Logan and Mike Rice at 628. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing? I just wanted to comment on that lady, Diane, last call in regards to blaming everything on Jim Tracy. And like you said, it starts with the Monsford all the way down, Clint Hurdle. At the time, he was a good manager, but he, just like in every all of sports, your time runs out. You got to move on. But the thing of it is, with the Rockies, Monsford and them just don't have, they're the ones that are making bad. Daniel Dodd, granted, he did a couple of good things, but everything, if this, I'm a St. Louis Cardinals fan. They wouldn't put up with all this, I guess, with the mediocrity in this organization. So my comment is, I just want to tell you that Lady Diane was, don't blame Tracy. It's everybody, like you said, from the top all the way down, and then the ball players are the ones that do the ball have to make the plays and all that. So it's on them also. So It starts at the top and it rolls all the way down. And that's my comment.
Thank you, Mike. I think when you play as poorly as the Rockies have played this year, there is plenty of blame to go around, and there are plenty of laps in which to place the blame. So, again, this kind of year, and Bob Apodaca has already been reassigned, but when you have this kind of year, if I were a member of the organization in any capacity, I would be fearful of where we go from here, because I think when you have this kind of season, other than the people who write the checks, everybody else is on notice. This is unacceptable, and in professional sports, these are the type seasons that get people fired. I'm not saying it's going to happen here, because I think this organization has displayed a great deal of patience, sometimes to a fault. So I'm not indicating that this is inevitable, but I'm saying in professional sports, generally speaking, when you have this kind of season after the expectation level was far different, nobody's job is safe.
Don't be surprised if.
That's right. 6:30 our time on 850 KOA. To the news center we go. We check in on this early evening with Susan Whitkin. 6:39 on News Radio 850 KOA. Rockies win today 11-10 in 11 innings. Our thanks to Tyler Colvin for spending some time with us. In the locker room, Rocks at home tomorrow night with the fireworks game. We've got 2 4-packs worth of tickets to give away here shortly. Matt is on 850 KOA with Dave Logan and Mike Rice. Hi, Matt.
Hi. It's been a little while, but I just want to comment on that lady from a couple of breaks ago. She's definitely a little animated, but I do believe most of the fall should be on Dan O'Dowd. I don't mind his offensive moves. It's the pitching that I think he's really blown it with over the last decade. The ones that have made it to the major leagues that have worked out, Apodaca kind of screwed up, and we lost them the next year, had a good season, and never had a good one after that, i.e. Jeff Francis, Ubaldo, Jason Jennings, who went down to Houston after he kind of fell apart and got burnt out. So that's where I kind of see Dan O'Dowd as the fault, and I think he's kind of got to go. Jim Tracy, as mad as I was when Clint Hurdle got fired, you can't have a meltdown after the World Series like that and expect to come. And then Tracy obviously took him to the playoffs that year and really turned it around. So, and he might be in the same boat now after having a meltdown. He might be out of a job. So we'll just kind of see how it goes.
Yeah, man, I guess on the pitchers, this is the risk that, and I'll preface what I'm going to say based on your comments about, and I disagree with your premise that some of the pitchers came up and then just flamed out all of a sudden. I think the challenge in running an organization that plays at altitude 81 times a year, I think is most obviously seen in pitching. And I'm not using that as an excuse, because the fact is the Rockies are always going to have to deal with that no matter who owns the team and no matter what happens. But it's also fact that is an element that other teams, there's no other team that has to deal with it, and it adversely affects pitchers. And that's why Dan yesterday in talking with season ticket holders. And I'm not saying that Dan, every move Dan has made has been a good one. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that they are trying to work on an issue that goes beyond this year. Whether or not Dan's around to continue to work on that is going to be up for debate. But the fact is, you can't talk about baseball in this environment without that becoming an issue. And it manifests itself in many times, in many cases, in pitchers breaking down. Look at good pitchers who have had two or three good years who then break down. And I think part of that is where they play and how much they play in that element.
I would agree with that.
Matt, thanks. I do find it interesting that, and I'm going to take Dan at his word here, because as you mentioned, they had a conference call. He talked about this four-man rotation and the number of pitches, the limit at
75.
Seven. Well, that limit, that's right, 75.
The
well,
pitch the, count.
The pitch count was increased to 75.
Okay.
Initially, it was, you're right, 75. And he talked about the fact that he'd actually been thinking, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he'd been thinking about doing this for quite some time. This was not really only a reaction to how poorly the club was pitching this year. I don't know. I mean, I love baseball. I played baseball here on a much lower level. I don't know that would be, I guess, as we sit here today, it's as good as anything, because nobody else has any ideas that worked either. That said, though, I don't know that a four-man staff with the number of pitches being limited and trying to basically pair your starting pitcher with a middle reliever, a long reliever type, that can then get the pitch count closer to 100. And so basically what you're saying is, because of the altitude we concede, that we're going to try to get to 100 pitches per game, but we're going to use two pitchers instead of one. Maybe I'm just hard-headed. I don't know that that's necessarily sound logic.
Maybe it isn't. And I think that's the debate. And maybe, and I'm speculating because I don't know, but maybe Dan and others in the organization feel we might as well try this now because the traditional model has not been consistently successful. And what's interesting is if you look at the playoff years, and you think ultimately the goal is to win a World Series, not just get to the playoffs. They didn't win. So was the pitching better in those seasons? Yeah, clearly. But at the same time, you know, when you look at the body of evidence over the course of the franchise in 20 years now, what's been the predominant theme? And Dave, I'm not trying to defend it or apologize for it, because the fact is I think it goes along the lines of what you were talking about. Hey, this might be as good a time as any to give it a shot and see where it goes. And I don't think the Rockies know where it's going to go at this point.
All I can tell you is yesterday was the day that Marty McFly was supposed to arrive when he traveled to the future. It was yesterday.
No, it was. That was a hoax.
No.
Yes. It's October.
It was 2015,
October, whatever. They've had these internet hoaxes where they show the picture.
So I've got 3 years.
You've got 3 years, yeah, of the 1.21 gigawatts. One of the great lines in movie history.
Reed Fisher, a fan, says, was it October or was it
yes.
June?
October.
Really?
I believe October 21st.
All right, let me just ask you this. Let's see how big of a fan. What year did Back to the Future come out? Ha-ha. 1985.
That's right.
Very good. You guys are really, you're just special.
Yeah. Who
with your knowledge.
Is the word protagonist? Who's the protagonist of Marty's dad?
The protagonist of Marty's dad?
Yeah, you know, the guy who bugs him and picks on him. I might have the wrong word there. You know,
I don't know.
Biff. Remember Biff?
Vaguely. 6:45 our time on News Radio 850 KOA. When we come back, we're going to have our Facebook topic of the day. And we've got a couple of winners today. But first, final traffic check of the afternoon. Here's Vicki Evans. You know what? I've spaced on Biff, and I'm really not proud of my effort. Yeah. Back 6:52 on News Radio 850 KOA. We will be here for the next 7 or 8 minutes.
Yeah, Facebook questions here in a moment. I wanted to make one correction. I said earlier that we did not yet have a number on the Waldo Canyon fire, and the number that Springs Mayor Steve Bach said today at an afternoon news conference was that 346 homes on 34 streets have been destroyed. So
wow.
I just wanted to make sure that number was out there, because it was something different And I apologize for not having that earlier.
Our Facebook topic of the day, and because of yesterday's coverage, which on this show we went wall-to-wall with the fire situation. So we have two winners today. Both of you will receive Rockies tickets for tomorrow night's game against the San Diego Padres. That is the fireworks game. So you've got each winner will have a four-pack of tickets to head to Coors Field and enjoy yourself.
And our winners today, wrapped up in one topic of the NBA draft, are Charlie Johnson and Jeff Cook. Very nice, gentlemen. Charlie's question was, will the Nuggets trade up or down, and who do you think they'll pick? Because the NBA draft is going on as we speak. And Jeff had a question of, should the Nuggets make a push to land a big man such as Pau Gasol now that the Lakers are hinting at trading him? Draft would be a good time to make the bid, give up a player and a draft pick or two. And so far, the Nuggets have not traded up, Dave. We are through 13 picks. Anthony Davis was the top pick to the Hornets, and the Nuggets have not traded up. I don't think we were expecting them to trade up.
No.
And as far as making a run at Gasol, it's an interesting. I would be a little surprised if they did that.
Well, number one, Gasol, I believe this to be true, has 2 years left on his deal at 18 per. 18 million.
Yeah.
18 big, large ones. So, you know, I don't know that that makes a lot of sense. Now, from a low post standpoint, in terms of a skilled post player offensively, I still think Gasol has plenty left. And would he be, I mean, if the Nuggets could make that sort of move, would he be a plus for them? I think he would, because they don't have a low post presence, at least offensively, that is as prolific a score as Pau Gasol. That said, when you have to factor in everything, including $36 million guaranteed, and Powell is he 34?
Probably.
He's right on the cusp of starting to kind of decline a bit. I just don't think that's going to happen. So you too, congratulations. Enjoy the game. 6:55, and Ron and Centennial is next on 850 KOA.
Hey, Dave and Dave.
No, it's Dave and hey, Mike.
I'm sorry, Mike Rice. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
No worries.
I keep hearing this argument about the pitchers, and the main reason why they don't do very good here in Colorado is because of the altitude. And I got an argument on that. If that's the case, then why do all the rest of the pitchers that come to Colorado don't have any problem pitching here from the other teams?
Well, they do. I mean, the fact of the matter is they do.
Well, they don't seem to be having as much a problem as the Rockies pitchers.
Well, there have been three really great starts this year by an opponent at Coors Field. I mean, Edwin Jackson came in on a bit of a roll today for Washington, and he goes three innings, gives up 10 hits and 8 runs, all earned. So it's pointless to say. And Ron, thanks a lot for the call. It is absolutely pointless to say that Coors Field is not a factor, that altitude is not a factor, because it is when it comes to pitching. The key thing is finding a way to combat that. To me, you got to have a bit more of a bulldog mentality. I'm not close enough to the Rockies pitchers to know whether or not they have that or not.
Well, and the other thing, too, is I don't think anybody is, first off, nobody's saying that that's okay. That we're just saying is it's a fact.
It's there.
The Rockies have to deal with it. And the other thing is opposing pitchers don't pitch half their games here. They come in, they might pitch in a divisional rival, they might pitch twice or maybe at tops three times here over the course of a season.
And that is going to do it for the show. Thank you very much for being with us. Thanks to those that made it possible. Rockies baseball tomorrow at 5:30. We're going to take off here at 3. For Mike Rice, I'm Dave Logan. Enjoy your night and see you tomorrow on 850 KOA.
Copyright by The Navigators, 2013, all rights reserved.